And now, you're tuned into RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Rebeller Sports.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to your RBLR Rays show. My name is Zach. I'm one of your hosts, along with my good friend Pat. How are you doing, Pat?
Oh, I'm doing swell, if a little out of sync with myself. It's one of those weeks where I feel like we're all out of sync, really. It's that week of limbo between Christmas and New Year's where, like, things kind of are happening, but are they really? Time is an illusion. Time is a flat circle. So if I look like I'm out of sync, it's because I am, both mentally and physically, and really good at ventriloquism.
That is a very insightful beginning to this show. I really, really, really appreciate that insight. And if you appreciate the insight that you get from Pat and from us as a team over the weeks, go ahead and like and subscribe to the show. If you're not already, which you should be, but if you're not, go ahead and like and subscribe and continue to be a part of what we're building. We've got some fun off-season stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're going to be doing some rankings. We're rounding out our player reviews. Got a lot of fun stuff that we're going to continue to keep doing throughout this off-season. And then before you know it, spring training will start coming. Every time I see a random highlight from the couple of Rays players that are playing overseas, Jose Siri's playing a little bit. I saw a great highlight of him. I'm just like, when is spring training? It's not soon enough. It needs to get here. I'm ready for spring training. I'm ready to be done with the offseason.
Yeah, me too. I mean, as much as I love Jose Siri just launching bombs all over the Dominican League, I'm ready to see some true American baseball going on.
And we will soon enough. But in the meantime, as we are waiting for that, we have a couple of fun things for you guys today. We're going to talk or just do a quick roundup of some of the moves that have been going on in the offseason. We've got a couple of news bits around the AL East. We're also going to give you our New Year's resolutions. We're going to have some fun with that. So stick around for that. And we're going to round out this year of 2023 strong. So as we're getting into that, let's talk a little bit about what's been going on in the American League East. The Rays have not made any moves in particular at all over the last week. However, there are quite a few moves that have been going on around the AL East, which I think are worth discussing because they're all going to affect us in some way. Kevin Kiermaier signed back for a one-year deal with the Blue Jays. Right after that, the next day, the Blue Jays made another move that certainly was one of the moves of the offseason where they signed Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. To be, I guess, their backup or starting shortstop. I don't know. That was an odd move. Then the Red Sox decided they were going to finally go full gear, as they've been talking about all offseason, and just go, you know, pedal to the metal and sign Lucas Giolito. Just absolute, like, complete pedal to metal move, like pure gas move. And then they decided to then, you know, as an add-on to adding a middle of the rotation starter, decided to then trade away their best starting pitcher in Chris Sale. Maybe he's their best starter. I think he's their best starter. Maybe he's not. I don't know. But they decided to trade him away, and in return got Vaughn Grissom back from the Braves, because the Braves are just going to continue to accumulate talent, and I guess nobody's going to stop them, which is great. As a side note as well, Frankie Montas, who was kind of a part of the Yankees rotation last year, he agreed to a one-year deal with Cincinnati, so he will no longer be around for the Yankees this coming year. Pat, as I just threw out a bunch of those moves that were going on, is there any one of those in particular that sticks out to you as, like, is going to be the most effective, it's going to affect the Rays the most in 2024?
The one that's probably going to affect the Rays the most coming into next year is probably the Chris Sale trade, because Chris Sale has really struggled with health for the past few years. But when on, he's one of the most dominant left-handed starters we've seen in the past decade. He is a scary guy when he is on his best work, but he's not shown his best work for quite some time. He seems to be on the mend, though. He pitched over 100 innings last year after coming back from the IL. And he can give any team fits on any given day. So for the Red Sox to kind of, I guess, shift Sale and then replace him with Giolito, I'm not that high on Lucas Giolito. I think he's a kind of one season breakout, kind of overhyped guy. He gives up a ton of home runs. I don't know if being in Fenway is going to help that in particular. So I think probably the Red Sox have got a little, like, as of right now, have gotten a little bit easier to face. So because of that, that means that the Rays, when facing them, will hopefully get an extra win somewhere. But the rest of these moves are all kind of like low impact. I'm kind of excited about the Blue Jays moves for a particular reason, but let's stay on this Red Sox Braves trade first, Zach. Vaughn Grissom for Chris Sale. Do you think it's a good move for the Sox?
So I think if we're just talking about, like, you know, the trade, if we're just sort of independently looking at it, I think the talents that switched hands were fine. I don't think it was like a really big overpay or anything. That's about right. If the two teams involved, one's looking for a shortstop and one is looking for a starting pitcher, that are both kind of, you know, high risk, high reward. Because Vaughn Grissom, he has been, I don't believe he's been, he had some injury issues at one point, but I think he's been fine. And then the big issue with him is he's just not that good defensively. He has a lot of really good offensive numbers. He's been very good offensively for the Braves, or good enough for them. They're very good offensive team. So there's some lineup protection there that I wonder, although I will say going to the Red Sox, he does still keep some of that lineup protection because the Red Sox do have a good lineup. But when I'm looking at this from a Red Sox perspective, I just kind of don't know where they're going. Like I don't think they should have fired Shane Bloom in the first place. We talked about that when it happened. I think it was a bad move. And so now they really seem rudderless because you just brought in Lucas Giolito, which I would have thought was a move to kind of calm down your rotation. But now you just traded away your top end talent. So the issue with it for me is while Chris Sale is probably not going to give you a whole lot of innings over the last, what is that, four seasons, he has not pitched over 150 innings. He pitched 147 in 2019 and 102 last year. And the 2 years in between, he pitched like 50 innings combined. So he's not been giving you a lot of innings, but it's undeniable when he's right, he is, you know, capable of top of the line starter production. So when you move him, you basically remove that possibility from your rotation. You don't have a whole lot of guys that have that potential. Do you really think Garrett Whitlock is going to make that next jump into the next year? Do you think Brian Bayo, I'm probably saying his name wrong, do you think he's going to make the jump to be that guy next year? Maybe you do, and maybe that's what the Red Sox think, and they feel like they can move on from Chris Sale. I don't feel that way. I feel like I don't want to say they're punting, but it's a very weird move because it would look like a move of a team that says our lineup is a weakness. We need to strengthen it. That has not been the Red Sox problem. They have not had a problem scoring runs. They've been scoring runs. They have not been preventing runs. And so now they just made a move, which is doubly hindering to that, because not only are you getting rid of your top of the line starter, but you're bringing in a shortstop that is not a very good defensive shortstop. So now you're going to be allowing more runs from that perspective. And I understand there's been some issues with Trevor Story's health. So maybe that's the impetus for it, because you really can't afford to not have somebody you're confident in manning that position consistently. They kind of had a revolving door there last year. So I understand maybe that's the reason they decided to do that, was because they know Story's health has been an issue. So they want to have somebody else as an option. That's fine if that's what they wanted to do. But I feel like giving up your top of the line starter doesn't make sense, because your biggest weakness is your starting pitching. I think it's a bad move for the Red Sox. I think they're a rudderless, just no direction whatsoever organization. They do not scare me, because I know that even if they put up some runs, we're going to put up some runs on them. Their bullpen is really good, which is great. I mean, their bullpen has been, I would say, top 25-ish percent of the league. They had a really good bullpen. But the problem is they need to get there. And now they're having to bring some of their guys, like Garrett Whitlock, who would be a great, you know, like two or three inning guy in most organizations that have a strong starting rotation. He is now being forced into a starting role, which is just going to put more stress on the bullpen, and it just, you know, it'll devolve from there, especially if they're not getting good innings out of their starters. So I don't like the move. I think it's continuing to put the Red Sox in a bad position. I say I don't like it from the perspective of if I was a Red Sox fan. As a Rays fan, I quite enjoy it, because it just looks like they're becoming more rudderless and being complete, you know, just kind of disintegrating into nothingness and just kind of going through another reset, which is fine with me, because it's just one less team to have to worry about. We have enough to deal with in the AL East as it is. So I'm fine if they just want to be a rudderless ship adrift at sea.
Yeah, they seem completely unsure if they want to tear it down and like rebuild properly, or if they want to try and go for it. They're not quite sure, because if you're gonna rely on your young pitchers to kind of develop into your rotation, like Bayo, like a Crawford, yeah. then why would you spend so much money on a two-year deal for Lucas Giolito? It seems really strange, especially because he's not the anchor for that kind of young staff that you'd want. He sure, he'll, you know, maybe be a veteran presence, be calming or whatever, but he's not that anchor. He's not a stopper, which is like the old school term for like, hey, we're on a slide, but this guy's on the mound today. He's not really one of those. Fans of this show may just think, because maybe this is what I'm thinking because I'm crazy, but Cooper Criswell got signed. Are we going to see the Cooper Criswell breakout into the rotation for the Red Sox? Is that what we're doing? Is this all an elaborate ruse to get Cooper Criswell the innings that he deserves? Maybe. And if so, thank you, Red Sox, for doing something that the Rays can't really afford to be doing right now, but I'm glad you're doing it. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's good that they've got Vaughn Grissom playing shortstop, but like, he's not a needle mover for me, really. He's young, but he's not going to... Like you said, he's not addressing the most prominent need for the Red Sox right now.
Yeah, and I think when you compare it to the Rays move of their ace in this offseason, you can see that the Rays made a much better move than the Red Sox did, because the Rays... They moved on from a guy who was a top end of the rotation talent, and they got really good return on that. Now, certainly Tyler Glasnow is more valuable than Chris Sale is right now, but it does seem like they're selling low on him. Like, it's definitely, he's not at his highest value right now. And maybe they just don't feel like he's ever going to get back to his highest value. So they're just trying to get what they can for him, and the Braves are ready to bite. But it just seems like a very weird trade, because I'm always concerned when you trade from a position of need to improve a position of strength for you. It just seems like you don't, maybe it makes me think you're not evaluating your talent correctly, or maybe, and maybe I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they're seeing something we're not seeing, but to me, it appears that you're not doing a very good job of evaluating your talent, and you're just making moves that, you know, that you're just trying to kind of hit check marks on your board. Like somebody said, you need to get rid of Chris Sale, or there was an organizational decision. You guys needed to do that. So you just got the best value for him, but you didn't really address a position of need. It just doesn't really make sense to me from an organizational perspective, but I guess that's what the Red Sox want to do. Any of the other moves that were made that you are interested in or want to dunk on, or any other,
I do want to dunk on a move, actually. I want to dunk on the Blue Jays a little bit, because the Blue Jays were, you know, big in on Ohtani. He was not on a flight to Toronto, but we all thought he was for a hot minute. And, you know, we thought they were in on Cody Bellinger, which they still could be, theoretically. But to me, the signing...
He's kind of a weird shoe that hasn't dropped, Cody Bellinger is at this point in the offseason.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. But to me, the signing of Kiermaier explains to me that the Blue Jays aren't going to pursue Cody Bellinger. I don't know why you'd have both on the team unless, you know, you're really going to commit to Kiermaier as the fourth outfielder, which I guess you could do. But I don't know. Kiermaier did actually okay for the Blue Jays, to his credit, last year. But it's just a weird outfield. Right now, it's Varsho, Kiermaier, Springer.
Yeah.
So I guess you could do with an extra outfielder to kind of shore up the depth there. They got IKF as well, which to me was like, what are we doing? Is this the Matt Chapman replacement, IKF? Because again, it's just low ambition moves for a team that seems like they're almost there. And also from a, you know, on analytical kind of outsider's perspective that doesn't know the organization as well as I would the Rays, the Blue Jays window seems to be dangerously close to shutting if they can't figure something out in the next year or so, because Vlad and Bo Bichette are really close to being at the end of their deals. Mm-hmm. We've already used up 3 years of George Springer's 5-year deal. Mm-hmm. And so you need to get a move on, really. And if IKF is your Matt Chapman replacement, I guess he'll be close to the kind of fielding value, but he'll be nowhere near the potential batting value that Matt Chapman could add for you, especially in the power department. So it just feels like loads of low ambition moves for a team that tried really hard for Ohtani and is now kind of just sulking because they didn't get him and don't really know how to move on from not getting their big name target. Is there a master plan that the Blue Jays have that I'm not seeing?
I think what their master plan is to just really, really hope that Vlad Jr. returns to his MVP-ish form of a couple years ago and just hope that Bo Bichette decides to be an MVP candidate, because they're really not, like, they're not improving. And I've talked about it before. The Blue Jays, to me, are a team that is dangerously close to, as you're saying, missing their window, but also being known as one of the most underperforming teams of all time. Like, when you look at the core that they've accumulated, to like, what have they accomplished since they've had this young core of really talented guys, talented pitching? They've had some talented pitchers almost every year. They've accomplished like nothing over that entire period of time. At least when you look at the Rays, as much as we would like to have a ring, there's a couple AL East crowns in there. There's a chip to the World Series in there. There's some stuff that's been accomplished by this Rays team. What has the Blue Jays accomplished? Like, nothing. They haven't won the East. They haven't won. They haven't won like really anything in the playoffs. They haven't gone to the ALCS even. They've done nothing. And
have they won a playoff game at all?
I don't. They may not have, to be honest with you. I think they may have won one like a couple years ago when they were in a longer series. I don't remember off the top of my head, they may even not have. They've really just kind of been they're getting up there, because I think when you look, if they continue on the path that they're currently on and don't really do anything else, if you look back on this stretch of Blue Jays baseball, if you were a Blue Jays fan, I feel like you had to be really disappointed in the talent that you had. Because, like, I find it, I mean, maybe they will, but it seems like it's going to be hard to keep both Bichette and Vlad Guerrero, and then also keep George Springer around. Like, it seems like somebody in there is moving on. I don't know who it is, but, like, it just seems like they're going to have a tough time paying all those guys. And the time at which they're going to have to pay them is fast approaching. And if Bo Bichette has another really good year, and if, you know, Vlad Guerrero has another really good year, number one, that may not necessarily correlate with the team's success, because that's happened before and the team hasn't been very successful. But number two, it's going to make them really valuable as a free agent and really hard to re-sign for anything below market value. So the Blue Jays are in a really precarious spot right now. The funny thing to me about IKF is you had a lineup last year from the Blue Jays, which didn't really seem to have it, which didn't have a whole lot of holes. Like, there was like, we were playing them, I would say their lineup is pretty good. There's no like obvious attack point. You've now introduced that by bringing in IKF. Like, I now have a point where you can attack that part of the lineup and try to get some advantages for you as you're going through that lineup as a pitcher. You can attack that point in the lineup, and it just doesn't seem like the Blue Jays are serious right now about being a title contender, to me anyway, because they're not doing anything to improve. They're not making any moves to get, you know, to that next level, and they haven't shown me that they're capable of going to that next level as currently constructed. The Rays have shown me they're capable of that as currently constructed. The Blue Jays have not shown me that. The Yankees have not shown me that. And guess what? They went out and made big moves, even though I don't know how much, I don't know if they're going to be the end all be all for them, but they did make big moves. And you look at, you know, the Red Sox are also kind of doing nothing. And the Orioles, even though they haven't proven to me that they can get to that next level necessarily, they have talent that is improving year over year. Like, I don't know if the Blue Jays really have that young talent that's improving year over year that could be the next step for them. So again, it's another organization in our division that I'm just not super impressed with.
Yeah, it's worrying for the Blue Jays. That, I mean, they're missing a starter. They definitely need a starter. I think they were planning on Alek Manoah figuring it out by now, but he has not. So yeah, I mean, and I'm also just worried, like, if Bo Bichette goes down, they're gonna feel that really hard. If George Springer goes down, they're gonna feel that really hard. If Vladdy gets injured, they're gonna feel that. Their second tier of position player talent is a big drop off compared to their current position player crop. Yeah. And I believe in their bullpen. I think their bullpen is actually quite good. And I think the starters that they have are all good, but they're missing one. So things could go very badly, very quickly for the Blue Jays, and I'm worried about them. We've talked about the Red Sox. I think they're an easy last place in the division. I don't think they're an awful team, but it would be pretty easy to bank on them being last in the division, or at least the least talented team in the division.
I'd agree.
Part of me thinks it's then the Blue Jays, if they're not careful.
I think it gets really interesting, because the question that, to me, and this is the question I think we'll be answering as we're ramping up to the next season, is what do the Baltimore Orioles look like? They haven't really done anything this offseason. They've not really made any major moves. And I kind of keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with them because I feel like they just need to supplement their young talent a little bit. Because if you go back into the next season as currently constructed, you're putting a lot of pressure on that young talent to continue to develop, and maybe it will. But if any of them regress, like, I feel like you're in a bet. Like, what happens if Adley Rushman just regresses a little bit, just has an off season? That puts them in a bad position. So I just wonder why they haven't made a move to sort of improve their roster just a little bit, to give them a little bit more cushion, to give their young guys a chance to, you know, have a bad season if that's what is going to take for their development. Considering they have so much money they could be spending, like, I don't know that they're like necessarily, like, I haven't followed Baltimore extensively, so I don't really know what they look like from like a money spending perspective, but it seems to me like they could at least be spending a little bit, and they really aren't. Like, I was a little surprised that we didn't hear their name at all in the Ohtani sweepstakes, because you want to talk about a move that takes them to the next level, that would have been it. But we didn't hear anything. We didn't even hear a peep about them in the, which I was a little surprised by, because, like, why not just say, I mean, maybe he doesn't want to go there and that's fine, but, like, you're not even going to take a swing, and maybe they did and we just don't know about it. But, like, it just seems a little odd that they wouldn't at least try, because that it would give you so much lineup protection for these young guys that are trying to be on the come up. That would have made a big deal, and maybe they'll make a big move. Some, I mean, like, Bellinger's still out there, and if you think he's going to continue to be as good as he's been, maybe that's the move, but who knows? I mean, he has been either an MVP type player or really bad. So, I mean, who knows what to expect from him, but maybe he's the move, and maybe he improves their roster, but they really haven't made any moves. So I think at the moment, the Rays and the Yankees are up there. I think Baltimore's up there too. It's the three of them at the top, and it's going to kind of depend on, you know, what Baltimore does, and if the Yankees kind of stand pat, or if they make any other moves, then how the Rays' health is. Those three are going to kind of jostle for the top. And then I think you're right. It's the Blue Jays and the Red Sox are kind of down there on a second, at another, at a tier below, at least at the moment.
Yeah. The Orioles are just crying out for an extra starting pitcher or two, like a true top of the line starter. Why have they not traded for Dylan Cease yet? It seems like the most obvious trade that hasn't happened. Burns.
Yeah.
Which the Corbin Burns sweepstakes have been real quiet, like very mysteriously quiet. But yeah, that, and they've only, I've just had a check now, as you were saying that they have currently only got about $37 million committed to next year, before our salaries come in, which is not a lot. So they could absolutely add anything, really anything that they want, a bit of top of the line talent. Yeah. Some reason they've got $12 million committed to Craig Kimbrell, and that's like that's it in terms of like big salary commitments.
Yeah.
So the Orioles need to add something. I think they will, but then again, every time I thought they haven't. They didn't last off season when things were looking on the up for them. They didn't do anything at the deadline really, except getting Jack Flaherty, which was a dud. Worried about the Orioles, but the Yankees, they got. I don't think I'm worried about them losing Frankie Montas, but the Yankees got Juan Soto, who's, you know, going to be so, so good in Yankee Stadium as a lefty hitter. In fact, I'm actually quite high on their whole redone outfield, like a good fielding athletic outfield that they've got now. I'm a bit worried about Judge playing center field, but the Yankees are a bit scary for next year. The Orioles, I think they, you know, it's clear that they need a starting pitcher. They won 100 games last year, but I don't know. It always felt like that starting rotation was waiting to go wrong somewhere, you know, like Dean Kramer, Kyle Bradish. It all felt like they were overperforming a little bit, and they were riding a lot on that kind of top arms at the back end of the bullpen with the Canoes and the Bautistas. So like they just need a bit of depth, because a lot of things went right for them last year, and you've got to prepare for a season where you overperform as much as you did a year before. You've got to prepare for some regression, and currently they've not done any preparation for any regression. They think running it back will bring the same results, but I think that would be foolish. I think that would just be like, you know, what happened to the Rays in 2023 could happen to any team. at any given time. And if that happened to the Orioles, where, you know, if, let's say, Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman were both out for the full year, and then also Ryan Mountcastle also was hurt for half the year, and also their rotation, all their elbows all exploded at the same time, would they be able to compete? No, the Rays can. So there's a way you can prepare for that.
Well, and the other thing too is, and even if we're talking about like scenarios where like maybe somebody could get hurt, they will not have Felix Bautista. Like, that's a big deal. Like, I don't know what level of like when he'll be able to return at some point for them. I don't know where he's at, but they're going to be missing him for at least some of next season. So like, that's kind of a big deal. Like they rode him hard, and he won them probably several games over that last season just on his own. So, I think that's something they clearly haven't addressed that either, but I guess we'll just kind of have to see what happens. I'm excited to see what the rest of the offseason holds. I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of other movement in the American League East, but it'll be fun to see. But if you are out there in the audience and you need some movement in your wardrobe, if you feel like you've got some really good pieces here and there, but you're missing something, you need to make a big move to get that last ace that really is going to put your wardrobe over the top and make you an 100-win wardrobe, shop.rblrsports.com is the place for you. You can get anything for any of the teams that are in this this Tampa Bay market. Not anything, but you can get some of the best merch out there for the Tampa Bay sports market. And if you don't want to even pay the price that we're offering, which I think is a good price, you can take 10% off of the prices that we're offering with promo code Flappy. 10% off everything and anything that you buy. Promo code Flappy, FLAPPY. Shop.rblrsports.com.
As my New Year's resolution is to get the one that was in the ad, acquire, dominate, develop, repeat. Oh, it's so good. It's so Rays. I want that one.
That is definitely one of my New Year's resolutions as well. But not only do we have New Year's resolutions as we are individuals, I can't speak. We have some New Year's resolutions that we are going to share with you all. For us, I have a resolution for myself for this coming year. Pat, what is your New Year's resolution?
My New Year's resolution is to finally do it. It's to finally get to the promised land, to make the pilgrimage to Tropicana Field. I have, for too long, experienced the game from afar from MLB TV, and I want to go see my Flappy Boys in person in 2024. I'm going to try and summon it into existence that I will go to the Trop and I'll see the Rays in person and see them for myself. See what all this hype is about. These Rays, are they any good?
That would be fantastic. I would love to hear your feelings and your experience from being in the Trop. It's a great place to watch a baseball game.
I need to do a Trop review. I need to be like the ultimate outsider perspective. Everyone says the Trop is not the best place to watch a baseball game, and I'm like, I need to go figure out if it actually is or not.
Well, let me ask you this question. How many like live baseball games have you been to?
Okay. So I have been to 5 baseball games in person. I went to go see the Las Vegas 51s, who are now the Aviators in AAA. They were the Blue Jays affiliate at the time. I saw them play 2 games against the Fresno Grizzlies back in like 2013. And then I saw the Blue Jays play a couple of games against the Oakland A's at the Rogers Center. And then I have also seen an Italian league baseball game. It was a championship series, so Italian league game. The ace, I couldn't remember his first name, but his last name was Castanova. I do remember that.
That's a great name.
And you went 9 innings and gave up 5 runs en route to the win.
Okay. You know what? There you go.
So that's my live baseball experience. I'm devastated that Casanova was not on Team Italy in the WBC earlier this year.
That's a great name. Like, that's a phenomenal name. Like,
80 grade.
That's an 80 grade name right there. Well, it sounds like you need to see a Rays game for the first time in person. That, like, I think I will be. We'll have to figure out and see if there's a way that we can all be there. That would be a great opportunity. That would be a great event, is if we could find a way to all be there together and watch a game together. That would be a lot of fun. Maybe that can be a goal that we can make that happen. That would be a lot of fun. My New Year's resolution for this year is one that I think I've needed to do for a little while now. And that is, I will still make predictions like on a season level for the Rays, but I'm going to stop making like next day and like individual series predictions for the Rays, because I don't know if anyone's been keeping score, if you go back to the last year, but basically every single time, because we occasionally record on like Saturday or Sunday, and every single time we would be recording prior to a game that day, and I would say, oh man, the Rays got this game. Every single time we lost. I didn't keep like full tally, but I mean almost every single time we lost. So my New Year's resolution is I'm going to stop jinxing the Rays. I'm still haven't decided if I'm going to actually pick like them to win anything. I might just make a nebulous prediction for them at the beginning of the year and pick somebody else to win the World Series, because it seems like my predictions are cursed. But I am definitely my resolution is to stop making, you know, Rays predictions the day of, because they just never go well.
Yeah, that's completely valid. I'm going to continue to push the most outlandish, unfounded assertions in the Rays sphere. So in that case, I'll see you in 12 months' time when we are player reviewing Aaron Civale winning the Cy Young.
That would be that. You know what? I would enjoy that episode greatly. I would greatly enjoy that episode. I think it would be one long awaited and. Be a good episode. I've been thinking about this for a little while now, and that's kind of like what's going to be the next Ray to win a major award, because I don't know that we really have, like, there's a couple guys that maybe could win Cy Young, especially the young guys that are coming up. I think McClanahan has been close to winning it a couple times. I don't know who's going to win the next Cy Young, and I definitely don't know who's going to win the next MVP, because we kind of the guy that I thought might do that is definitely not available, at least not anytime soon. By the way, just in case anyone's wondering, we're not really going to comment on anything more of that until anything. There's nothing substantial to comment on, so we're not going to comment on it, because there's really nothing. There's really not much to say about it at the moment, in case any of you were out there were wondering. So mm-hmm. Wonder no more. But I don't know who the next MVP type player is going to be from the Rays.
Caminero, if he can defend.
Maybe. I've said Josh Lowe before, only because he's kind of like a five tool type player. And of course, there is the only player who's had an MVP caliber season yet who's been on the team is Brandon Lau, because he hit 40 bombs. Was it 2021 that he hit? What did he hit? Was it 2019? 2019. I mean, Yandy could also potentially do. The thing that I think is tough with like Yandy is I just am not sure what an MVP season looks like from him. I think to win the MVP at first base is tough. It's just difficult, because mm-hmm. If you're going to be a position player MVP, they're going to look for some defensive value out of you at least a little bit, or you need to have like insane offensive value. So I mean, he'd need to hit 40 bombs probably. Could he do it? Maybe he could. I think he probably could. He had a phenomenal season last year. I mean, just like maybe the best season he'll ever have. And that's why I wonder, like, is that his ceiling? If that's not, because that's kind of what I think. I kind of think that's kind of as good as he'll ever be. And not that in a bad way. Like, that's phenomenal. Like, he's outstanding. But I don't know that he can get like is there another level he can reach? If there is, he 1,000,000% could win an MVP, because he's already like right in that stratosphere. And now that Shohei is no longer a part of the you know, American League, that definitely opens that up for him to potentially win something there. And I wonder if a guy like Soto and Judge being on the same team hurts them in an MVP perspective, because maybe they take some votes from one another being on the same, that we've seen that happen in the past, where like it's hard for two MVP candidates to be on the same team because they're going to kind of steal votes from one another. And of course, Bilal has finished top 10 in the MVP voting before. He's been outstanding. If he can be healthy for a full year, he 100% can do it. So I don't know. I would really, really, really like to see an MVP campaign from a Rays player. Maybe that's another one of my Rays solutions, is I am just going to hope that we're going to see an MVP campaign sometime in the near future. Cause I just really, really like to see, even more than a Cy Young campaign, cause we've seen that at least recently from a Rays pitcher. We haven't seen a real, like, I mean, as good as Yandy has been, as good as Bilal was a couple of years ago and has been, even the 2020 year, he was really good too. He was also in, I believe that's the other year he was in contention for MVP. I don't know that anyone has like real, other than Rays fans, has really said he is the, like, definitively said he's the MVP. I would love to be able to say that. Although I will say I probably did say that, or at least thought that about Bilal early in that season. I think he at least was for early in that 2020 season, but we haven't been able to say it like past like July yet. I would really love to say that. I would really love to be able to say that about a Rays player. So that's going to be my hope for next year, is that we're going to have a MVP type of player, because I think we have the guys who on this team that have the talent to do it, but it's going to be the health. It's going to be their ability to kind of meet the top of their expectations. I don't know if we're going to see it, but I really would like to see it.
Yeah, I would love to see it as well. But to be a negative, Nelly, it's not just being the best player in the league that wins you MVP when you're on the Rays. You've also got to be like significantly better than the players from New York and LA and from Boston and et cetera, yeah, et cetera. Looking at you, Devers and Paredes, and who was that utility guy from the Astros? Dubon?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if Paredes was on the Yankees, he would have won that Silver Slugger. He would have.
Oh,
the Rays
sure.
have got it. The Rays have got to be 10% better than what any other player would have to be just to get noticed in the MVP discussion. Because
which is why Yandy winning the Silver Slugger is so notable to me, because he was so much better than everybody else that it wasn't even close. You couldn't with a straight face give anybody else votes if for a first baseman in the American League if you wanted to ever be taken seriously again. He is so clearly the best first baseman. And I think like it, that's what it has to be for the Rays. I think that's why it's so hard for a Rays player to win MVP, because you've got a guy like Judge, a guy like Devers, guys like Bregman and Altuve, who are just going to always get at least a vote or two, because just by their name, it's going to be really hard for a Rays player to get there. But I believe that our guys have the talent to do it. Don't get it twisted. We have several guys who have the talent. I think Josh Lowe has the talent. I think Paredes has the talent. I think Bilal has the talent. I think Yandy has the talent to get to that next level and to be that MVP caliber player. And maybe Caminero sometime in the future could do that as well. But it's going to be tough. And I would love to see it happen, because it would be a kind of performance that would be truly legendary to be good enough to not only be worthy of the MVP, but to be so much better than the other players in the league that will be also up for that award. It would be a legendary season that I would just really love to see.
Yeah, me too. Before we go then, if you were the Rays, if you somehow became the whole Rays organization, or if you were a key figure in the Rays organization and they were, for some reason, at the Christmas party, they all got drunk and they were like, hey, we need to set a New Year's resolution for ourselves as an organization. What would you say the Rays need to do as their New Year's resolution?
So I think as the one thing that I would really like to see them do, because they've lost a couple of guys, they may lose a couple of guys in the bullpen, like a Diekman, like a Robert Stevenson, is to sign one more guy to their bullpen, one more kind of guy to be that guy. One guy who we haven't talked to. I don't know that we've really mentioned it too much on the show, maybe just kind of briefly. I'm going to butcher his name. Uwasawa. I can't even remember his first name, so bad. But he's a Japanese pitcher. He's been phenomenal over there, and there's been some interest from the Rays in signing him. It's been reported a couple times now that there's some interest there. He is a starting pitcher, and I think that, you know, I don't know what if they would bring him in over as a starting pitcher. For some reason, I thought I saw somewhere that there was some interest in bringing him over as like a bulk guy type of guy. Maybe he would just be a full starter. I don't know. But I just think whether it's the bullpen or it's the rotation, they're just one, like, because I think if you were to bolster the rotation, that's going to help the bullpen out a little bit to allow a guy like, you know, like Littell to kind of like go back into the bullpen to give them some more stability. So I think if you were to add a guy like Uwasawa, that would give them the ability to be a little bit more rock solid in the bullpen and to just be a little bit better as a starting rotation overall. So if I was making a move for them that I think would be reasonable for them, because I think Uwasawa is a guy that they could, you know, reasonably sign, and they have had some interest there. So that would be my move that I think would bring some value to the Rays. And I think it's something they could do and something they should do.
Yeah, I think absolutely. You can never have too much pitching, right? Like that's always the philosophy that you need to have, because if there's one thing you know about pitchers is they get hurt. So having more then less is always a good idea. Urasawa would be a really interesting name to watch how he adjusts to MLB caliber hitters, because he's not a stuff guy, that's for sure. He doesn't overpower you. He doesn't throw a high velocity fastball. He's definitely more of a command guy, which does fit the Rays kind of philosophy. So he'd be really interesting to see how he works out. If I were the Rays, I think the main thing at the top of the shopping list is get a catcher. We don't have a backup catcher unless it's Alex Jackson, right? Or did he leave? I can't remember. I think he's still with the org.
I'm not sure off the top of my head. Let me see.
Let's just find out, because right now we've got Rene Pinto. He's on an MILB deal. Okay.
Okay.
So we got Rene Pinto. He's the number one. But the number two, we're like really not sure. It could be Alex Jackson, I guess, if the season started today. Maybe someone else. But yeah, he's the only one on the 40-man, which is like, I'm like, listen, catchers are also a position where you're quite likely to get hurt. I would get hurt for playing catcher for one game. I'd probably need a week off after doing that. My thighs cannot handle it. So have catchers, get some catching depth. I'm still not completely sold on trading Bethancourt away, because even if Pinto is going to be the number one guy, I don't see what was wrong with having Bethancourt as a backup option. Because I personally, I don't know if the Rays do, value consistency in behind the plate and managing a pitching staff, and having that kind of consistency in approach and pitch calling is only useful to have catchers that know your staff. And getting rid of Bethancourt for what, I'm not sure, other than making Pinto the definite number one guy, but you could have done that anyway. So let's get a catcher. Sorry, not traded. DFA'd.
Released. Yeah, and I think that there's definitely something to kind of giving Pinto the keys. I'm big on that. If you're confident in a guy, giving him the keys and saying, hey, we believe in you. We're gonna remove some of the other guys. We're gonna make it super, super clear that you are our guy. So I'm kind of on board with that. But I do agree that having another backup catcher that you're confident in is a good idea. There hasn't been really any, you know, major health issues with him in his career. So that bodes well. That he will continue to be healthy and continue to be the guy behind the plate. But it does seem to a lot to make him be the only guy behind the plate all season. You're gonna need to spell him occasionally. So I agree that would be a good move for them. I don't know who exactly I would be looking for. I don't know who's like knocking around that is, you know, someone that I'd want to have on. Maybe that's something we can look into as we go throughout the offseason, if there's some guys that might be available that might be worth a flyer, but we'll see. But I agree. I think that would be a good move for the Rays to make if they don't already. I'm sure they already have a plan, but it would be good to see what that plan is for a backup backstop.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's my thing. Go get some catching, because if Pinto goes down, what are we doing? You know?
Yeah.
And we'll feel really stupid if something happens to Pinto. Hopefully nothing happens. He doesn't have a history of getting hurt. But if, you know, stuff happens in an MLB season, we'll look really stupid if we don't plan for if something goes wrong. Because, like I said, 2023, everything goes wrong. And like,
maybe that just means that my last New Year's resolution is, this is just like to the universe. I want the universe to hear me. I think we deserve a year as Rays fans, as we're going into this new year. We deserve a year where not nothing goes wrong. Like, that's maybe too much to ask, but maybe like fewer things go wrong than normal. Maybe Brandelau is healthy for a whole year. Maybe we don't have one of our starting pitchers elbow explode 3 weeks into the year. I think we deserve it. I think we should be granted it. I think for 2024, I'm going to, you know, put it out into the universe. The Rays are going to have a better luck year when it comes to injuries, and just, we're going to have less bad breaks going into this next year. I think I'm manifesting it. I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. If we can have three of our five rotation last the majority of the year, what a win that will be. A win that will be, and we'll be winning the World Series if we do that, probably. So I'm going to say it if you won't, Zach. I'll be the bringer of good vibes.
The bringer of good vibes. And thank you, everybody here who has been around for our good vibes all throughout this season and throughout this year of 2023. We really appreciate all of you coming around and being a part of this show. I've really enjoyed Pat, being around here with you on this show in 2023, it's been a lot of fun to bounce things off of you and to continue to put out what I believe is the best Rays podcast out there. And I'm enjoyed this year of 2023. It's been my first year on the show. So thank you to everybody out there for welcoming me into this RBLR world. It's been a lot of fun. I cannot wait to continue to see where we're going to go. Thank you all for being a part of what we're continuing to build. And I just can't wait to see what we're going to do in 2024.
Absolutely. I echo those thank yous as well. I mean, coming into the RBLR universe, everyone has been so accepting and kind and forgiving of me, you know, growing into this show. So I'm really grateful to you, to Eureka, our producer, to everyone in the RBLR network, because we all help each other out all the time, which is brilliant. And everyone who watches and listens and is on Twitter and all that great stuff. I love being part of the Rays community, and I can't wait for 2024 for it to keep growing, keep getting better. And I'm so looking forward to what 2024 will bring.
Yep. Eureka does so much work behind the scenes that a lot of you guys don't get the chance to see. We get to see it. He does so much work. He works so hard to build us up and to build up all the shows in this network. Let's give him a little round of applause, you know, at home, give him a little round of applause as well. And just everybody who's around and being a part of building this show, Ben, who was a huge part of this show and continues to be, a great friend to us, even though we don't get to see him, we don't get to talk to him very much. He's been a huge part of this network and the show. Thank you everybody for continuing to be a part of what we're building and continue to be a part of this network. Like and subscribe down in the description. There's links to all of our other social pages, so go give us a like over there as well. Stay tuned. We're going to have some fun stuff coming in January. Some game show type things maybe returning. So stay tuned. And as always, raise up.
Raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.